This podcast is a production of Crosspoint Church. Visit us online at crosspointwithane.org.
Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Good, good.
Well, I am glad to be here. I hope that you are. And it's a great day, as we do every week. I invite the ushers to come forward, and we just continue to worship God in tangible ways by entrusting Him with our finances. And so they're going to come forward, and we're going to continue to worship by saying, God, I love you and trust you this much. So glad we get to do that. While they're doing that, a couple of quick announcements. One, I don't think anybody partied as hard as I did yesterday. So my daughter turned 6. And entering a whole unknown realm of princess parties with 8 little princesses running around ingesting copious amounts of ice cream, cake. And so, yeah, I'm a little slow today. So started to have a little hair of the dog, a bowl of ice cream, but thought that unwise. Didn't do it. I have no idea where this story's going. I'm just filling time, I guess. Something else that actually does have merit, Pizza with the Pastors is tonight. That's tonight at 6 o'clock in this room. We'd love to have you come to that. That is an opportunity for it's kind of a bigger church. It's an opportunity for the church to be a little smaller for you. And you can come and talk to the pastors, the leaders over the different areas, and get to know them, and we get to know you, kiss babies, shake hands, all that cool stuff. You get free pizza. So that's a cool thing. Something I neglected to say first hour, please RSVP. We'd like to know how much pizza to get ahead of time. So you're all invited. Just let us know you're coming. And that's tonight at 6 o'clock, Pizza with the Pastors. All right? Go ahead and turn to John 8 as we get started. John is the 4th book of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, chapter 8. And I want to talk a little bit about freedom this morning, what it means to be free. I don't know if you guys ever use the Encarta dictionary thing on your computers. Like if you're using a Word document, you can define a word right there. And I just, for giggles, I looked up free, and this is the definition of free. Not controlled, restricted, or regulated by any external thing. Think about that. Not controlled, restricted, or regulated by any external thing. I want to talk a little bit this morning about what it means to be free, because it's pretty central to what it means to be a human being, especially an American human being. We love freedom. We sing about it. We fight for it. And really, kind of recently in history, we've entitled ourselves to freedom. If you mess with my freedom, you're not just messing with something in the periphery. I mean, you're messing with my value as a human. Anything that encroaches upon or tries to put demands on us or tries to control us, I mean, really, that's the bad guy. That's the man. That's the thing that, you know what? Avoid it if you can. Kill it if you can. Nobody messes with our freedom. And so there's this verse in Scripture that a lot of people don't realize it's even in the Scriptures. They don't even know that they have it committed to memory. They don't realize they've got some Bible memorized, all right? Jesus says this in John 8, verse 32. You will know the truth, and the truth will... Absolutely, man. We love that verse. I mean, who doesn't want the freedom, huh? That's my best Scottish that I do, right there. I'll be here all week. So, yeah, I mean, that's a favorite verse because we all want to be free. We all want to know the truth and be set free. Everybody wants that. We've committed it to memory. What's interesting about this passage is that most people don't realize, one, that Jesus said it. Two, it's part B of a two-part statement that he is making. So look at that passage again, starting with verse 31. To the Jews who had believed him, Jesus said, notice it doesn't just say believed in him, believed him. Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And suddenly it's not a favorite passage anymore, because it's conditional. There's some more loaded in it. If you hold to my teaching, if you submit your life and your living to my commands, to my ways, then you'll be one of my disciples, where we get our word discipline from. Then you'll be one of my disciples. Then you will tap into truth, and that truth will give you freedom. That's completely different. That's completely different. So I want you to know something this morning. My goal is that every human being in this room, from the stage all the way back to the sound booth, my goal is that we would leave here a different person than we walked in. Now, what I'm saying is, my goal is that every one of us will take a step. Whatever that looks like, each step is going to look different than somebody else's. Some will be big, some will be small. But everybody in the room would take a step in trusting Jesus, whatever that looks like. What I want to do this morning is not just talk about freedom, but to begin to redefine it for most of us. Because what I see so many people, so many of us giving ourselves to, pursuing so passionately, submitting our lives to, what I see in so many of us is something that may promised freedom, or we've convinced ourselves someday it's going to give us what it is we're after. But if we're honest, what we're finding is more of us are more trapped than ever, more imprisoned than ever, more and more confined in a smaller and smaller world. It's like the thing we were going after to live the dream and to have the freedom that we want, the way we went about it, it seemed right, but it's not producing what it promised. In fact, you could argue it's producing the opposite. We all want freedom and beauty in our lives. We all want our lives to have meaning and to make a difference. But there's, for some of us, this nagging guilt. For some of us, it's just this weariness. We're just tired. Many of us, we're controlled by fear and anxiety and worry. Or this growing awareness that there's this really ugly thing trapped inside my heart. And it seems to be growing. Hurts and rage, frustrations and irritations, all these things, that's the result of the path that you've put yourself on. And it seemed so right. The path you put yourself on, it seemed so right. But it's like it's not delivering on its promise at all. I'm fascinated by the fact that this exact phrase pops up twice in the Scriptures. Proverbs 14 and Proverbs 16. It says, there is a way that seems right to a man, generic, a human. There's a way that seems right to a human, but in the end it leads to death. At first it seems right. It means that you could argue for it. You could make a great case for it. You could get your friends on board with it. You could have an entire culture to back you on it. What are you talking? There is no other way to do it. This is how you do it. This is the best way to go. This is right. But in the end, it leads to death. And sure, you can be sitting here this morning, breathing with your heart beating, freshly showered. But some of you know exactly what I'm saying here. It's like death. It's like, this is not what I thought was going to happen. It's like I'm dead. But again, everybody wants their life to have meaning. Everybody wants their life to matter. Everybody wants to live the best life possible. And maybe you've never articulated it this way. You not only want to have the best life possible, but you would like for other people to have a great life because of your life. In other words, you want your life to have significance and impact. Everybody wants that. Yet, all humanity has trust issues with God, the giver of life. It's not that people don't believe in God. I mean, there are some people that don't believe in God, and if you're one of those, we honor you. Thanks for being here. But most people believe in a God. That's not the issue. The issue is that people don't believe he's good. He's not good enough to be entrusted with life. God gives life. Okay, that's fine. Most of us have an easy time accepting that on some level. But when the life giver then tries to have an authoritative role in the living of that life, that's when most human beings try to wriggle free. That's too much. So much, if you look at psychology and sociology and the way people interact and the way that they lay their life out, if you look at it, what it does is reveal that human beings walk around with this quiet terror that God may in fact exist here or there or everywhere, but he's not good enough. And so all plans and all resources and the way that we relate and behave, what we do, what we don't do, is really based on I'm going to have to be the God of it, because that God cannot be trusted on that level. I think it's fascinating that the picture of Adam and Eve sinning in the garden is not them becoming atheists and eating the fruit. No one was more aware of the existence of God than Adam and Eve. No one was more aware that God was powerful and created all things. The issue is not them becoming atheists. The issue is them deciding in a moment, that's fine, but he can't be trusted with my decisions and with my life. I can't submit my living to him. God, I believe that you exist. I believe that you're a creator, whatever that means. But I'll decide what fruit to eat. Because there's a way that seems right to me. It's like human beings have always wanted God to accessorize their life, but not lead it. It's okay to be around God, just not under him. To this day, really, if we're honest, believing in God, that's okay. Reorienting your life around who God is, that's a little too far, all right? That's only for people who put an A on the end of Jesus. You're Jesus. That's for another kind of person, all right? Believing in there is a God, fine, sure, that's great. Submitting your living, reorienting your world around his way. I remember Christy and I, when we first started becoming Christians, you know, my wife and I, we started going to church, and at first that's kind of all it was, and we started telling people, hey, you know, we've kind of really started going to church, and we're part of this church and stuff, and friends and family would be like, oh, cool, so you're part of a church, where is it, blah, blah, blah. When it became clear that we were starting to totally let God overhaul the way that we were living our lives, and when I say totally, it's not like we're perfect, but when that process began and people started to see, wow, they're starting to reorient their living that way, I mean, people were like, well, let's not take this too far. But, you know, that's a little fanatical. Church attendance, okay, but that other God, you can't trust God to that extent. You can't. He's not good enough for that. And what I had in my heart and what many of you hold in your hearts right now is belief in God is okay, but entrusting him with your life and letting that affect your life, that would be professional or intellectual suicide. God's not good enough for that. Some people say, I'm not going to entrust my living to God. I have too many unanswered questions. Some of you say, I can't give myself to God or give myself back to God that way. I acknowledge that he's there, but my friend got killed, or my parents died, or what about the tragedy? God's not good enough for that, for me to do that. Or some people say, I'm not going to give my living over to God and give him the role of authority in my life. I'm not going to let him change the course that I've put myself on. I'm having too much fun, or I've got too much professional, whatever, relational momentum going. God's not good enough to give up control like that. Human beings fight against the goodness of God. Always have been. We've always been doing this. I can't let God have the role of leader. Creator, fine. Just not master. It's been that way since the garden. There's always seemed to be a way that works, a way that's right for people. But in the end, it always leads to death. Now, I would argue that it is currently harder than it's ever been. Because we currently live in a culture where having leadership ability is the same as having value as a human being. Which one of you on your last resume wrote, born follower? Mr. Dougherty, what assets do you bring to our organization? Oh, I'm a sheep, man. Yeah, I couldn't lead baby geese. I'll hold the ladder, you go up it. That's my job. You know, what? None of us would do that. We wouldn't dream of doing that. No one wants to submit or follow any external thing. That's not freedom. That would place you as less valuable than the thing that you're submitting to, the thing that leads you. We will not do that. Now, and I'm not saying that leadership is bad. What I'm saying is we already have this in our hearts, and then our current culture kind of makes it worse. It just reinforces this idea that God cannot be trusted with the living of our life because that's something that simple-minded people do. Not me. It's okay to be around God, just not under him. I'm around God all the time. I just don't inhale. I really wish I hadn't just said that. So. God, you created life, but I'm going to have to be the master of living it. You're not good enough to dictate and to have the role of authority over my living. But see, I want my life to count. I want my life to have value. I want to live the best life possible. I want to live out my fullest potential and be involved with other people finding the same thing. I want that. But because God cannot be trusted with the living of that life, I am going to have to take control. I'm going to have to be the God of it. I'm going to have to do it my way. And over and over and over again, we find human beings pursuing in their own way this false version of freedom. And they're more and more trapped and controlled and miserable. And the world is smaller and smaller and smaller because they refuse to submit to the way of God. I want to illustrate this. Let's find out if this is reasonable. All right. By show of hands, who among you has always wanted to play the guitar? That's always been something I've wanted to do, and I've never learned how to do it. Never even picked one up. Raise your hand. You've never wanted to do it. Okay, you, sir. Would you be willing to come up here? I'm sure it's not what you signed up for today, but... I'm Steve. You're Blake?
Nate.
Can I call you Blake?
Sure.
Okay. It's already... I've kind of grown used to that name already. Nate? Come on over here. This is a bass guitar.
Sure.
I'm positive. I'll do the jokes. Come on. Thanks, man. All right. This is a bass guitar. Okay. Yeah, you
need to put it on. Or
yes, I do. I do. Commit, Nate. Let's do it.
Commit.
That's right. This is a bass guitar. Bass. I don't want to insult your intelligence, but they're bass notes. They're like the bottom, like the. Well, yeah. You know what you do if a bass player shows up on your front door, right? Paying for the pizza. I've been looking forward to that for a week, but it's kind of a moment for me. Okay, so I'm going to make this really simple for you, okay? This top string is the E string, okay? So if you don't do anything but just kind of do this down here, you get E. All right, give that a shot. Very nice, very nice. Okay, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give you a couple more notes. These are frets, and so as you squeeze those down, it tightens the string, and you come up a couple notes, all right? So look at you. That's like, all right, but that's wrong for the bass. All right, so
my name's Blake, remember?
That's right. Focus. This right here, this third fret with the dot, this is G. Okay, so give that a shot, G. Just hold it and then strum it here. Just one string. Nice, very rich sound here. Now this fifth one, do we get three and five? This is A. Try that one. Beautiful. Okay, here's what I want you to do. We're going to give you a rhythm here, and I want you to do two open E, bom bom. And then one on the third, which is the G, one, and then one on the fifth. Boom. So it's two, one, one. Ready? Go. Okay. Now repeat. Ready? One. Hold on. Oh. Okay. Now he's got more in him. Ready? One, two, three, four. Okay. Start open. That's okay. It's all right. Your first lesson in front of people. I imagine this is a little weird for you.
That's right.
Oh, two open E's,
yep.
And then one and one, and then start over. This is your rhythm, okay? One, two, one, 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 two. Keep going. Don't stop. Keep going. You got it. Yeah, baby. Okay. Now, you're going to end on the open E, okay? And you jump. One, two, three, stop. Yeah! Nice. All right. Not yet. Are you done? You're going to need therapy when I'm done with you, my friend. Sorry. All right. What I want you to do, this is Dan. Let me show you what it looks like when you're a little further down the road. All right? Go ahead. Give Nate Blake a hand. I appreciate you doing that, buddy. Very, very cool. gentlemen. Just out visiting churches. Oh, man. If anybody writes a note about, I don't like the worship there, take it up with Blake. All right. Interesting thing to think about here. As somebody that doesn't know the rules of the bass guitar, and we begin adding rules and structure, did he become more restricted or more free? When we piled on all these different ideas, I mean, we just a few of them, but and it's a big deal, especially up here for the first time. But as we piled on those different ideas in the way of the guitar, as he was introduced to more and more of that, did he become more constricted? Did his world get smaller? Or did it free him to play more music? It freed him. It made his musical world a little bit bigger. What I find interesting is the more that I learn about music, the more that I learn about the way that chords interact and the way that the dynamics between two notes and different progressions, I learn more and more, but it doesn't weigh me down. It frees me to play more and more music. My world gets bigger, not smaller. And it's interesting that the more rules, the more way that I embrace about the guitar, it doesn't make me a clone. It makes me more able to play this immeasurably diverse, all these different kinds of music. I mean, it's just four strings and a few frets. But it's literally, you could go on forever making unique music. It doesn't make my world smaller. It doesn't make my life smaller. It opens the world of music the more that I submit myself to the ways of the guitar. Now, I need to make a distinction, and I don't mean to be insulting, but we need to be very clear on this. Is the point the rules, or is the point the music? Some of you are like, well, it's hand in hand, right? But it's not, because there are people who know how to wind those strings, who know how to carve those and finish them. They know what the best brands are. They know where they come from. They know who the good bass players are and who the bad ones are. They can give you the history of the bass guitar. And you know what? They have no idea how to create music. But those who create music know the way. So you can know the rules and not know how to make music. But the opposite is not true. The point is to create music. Switch gears on this metaphor a little bit. How many of you at one point in your life, this is an honesty zone, so go for it. How many of you at one point in your life, maybe right around when you were in college, somewhere in there, you left Jesus or Christianity or the church or whatever your faith movement was that you were part of, because it seemed like the emphasis was about the rules? Yeah, look around. Look at that. And if we're honest, it's not that the rules were necessarily bad. It's just that they didn't go anywhere. They didn't do anything. It seems like the only thing the rules were there for was so that these spiritual people could rate the spirituality of these people. That's all it seemed to be for. It didn't produce anything. It didn't go anywhere. It's like there was just this core question. Are you against the right things? Do you prohibit the right things? Because that's what it means to be part of us. And so many of us are sitting here coming from a background that was around God and around Jesus discussions, but there came a point in our life that we left it because it didn't go anywhere. It was merely the strict observance of rules. And you outgrew it. You graduated from it. Maybe you were in a youth group, and it's like, that's a vestige of my childhood. Jesus and the youth group and that whole, no, I left it behind. I became too smart or too self-sufficient for the whole thing. Maybe there was a point in your life where you asked a question about, hey, why do we do this and not that or this or that? Or why if we say that this is true, do I continue to see this in the world? Or how come I'm starting to learn things in biology, but we say this is true and they're completely at odds and really the biology thing makes more sense to me at this point? Or if God, we say God is this way, what I'm seeing in the world is this way. How do we, and even with a good heart, somebody basically told you, we just swallow that. You don't question that. That's part of our faith. And so really, it was like you got honest with yourself and you said, you know what, this is completely detached from reality for me. This seems divisive. I walk around with a sense of guilt and condemnation. I'm always measuring whether somebody's in or out. God seems like the smallest component of my life. It seems like he and his church are really scared I'm going to kind of fall out of line. And so you were just honest one day and you put distance between you and the whole discussion. And to this day, many of us sit in these seats having wrongly associated Jesus Christ with an ever-mounting, narrow list of do's and don'ts that prohibit more than they produce. We're wrong. We're sitting here not realizing that we think that, and we're wrong. We equate the life giver with something we outgrew and outsmarted. So we don't need him anymore. Sure, there's a God, but I'll decide which trees to eat from. And I want to tell you this, and this might be one of the most life-changing things you've heard in a while. I want you to know that the faith system that you just admitted to being part of, or you are around, or you're aware of, or maybe you have this impression because of what you've seen on TV or whatever, that system contradicts the Scripture. It contradicts what God is asking us to do, inviting us to do. By submitting our lives and trusting our living, giving him the role of chief authoritative figure, master, Lord. That's what Lord is. It's master, the authority in our life. It's not so that God can make our world smaller. It's not the control that his insecurity demands that he has on us. That's not what it is. The way of God is not in place so that the church can control people's behavior. Jesus did not come and die for a specific flavor of morality that changes from century to century. That's not what it is. God gives you life, and then he gives you living. Listen to Psalm 119, verse 32. The psalmist writes, "I run in the path of your commands, for you have set my heart free." The literal Hebrew could be translated, "You have enlarged my heart," which is another way of saying you have enlarged my life. You have expanded the borders of my existence by following your commands. Same psalm later on in 44 and 46, it says, "I will always obey your law forever and ever. I will walk about in freedom, for I have sought out your precepts." By following your way, God, my life doesn't get smaller. It releases the song you put inside of me that I deeply long to play. Now, a set of interpretations on the scriptures that a rabbi would have is called his yoke. So he would summarize the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, and then the prophecies and the history, and he put all that together. And his take on the scriptures that he would try to teach his students, his learners, his disciples, that was called his yoke. It was his take on the scriptures. So listen to Jesus in Matthew chapter 11. He says this, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Take my teachings upon you. Take my way upon your life. Don't just agree. Take it on you and live it and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy and my burden is light." That's an invitation. But Jesus is so clear here. Entrust your living to me. Not just, and I say this respectfully, not just your Sunday mornings, not just the night before an exam, not the morning of a medical procedure. Give me the living of your life. Let me be the authority for your living, for your decisions, for your behaviors, for your relationships. And I will not make your world smaller. I'm not going to have you jumping through hoops. I want to give you rest for your souls. I want to give you, as Jesus says in John 10, the best life possible. Jesus wants you to know that God didn't just create life. He created living. And there's a way that seems right to us, things that we can just make up. But in the end, it just leads to noise. His way frees us if we will submit ourselves to him and to his authority. We'll know the truth, and that truth sets us free. So Jesus invites you to play. We're going to finish up in Matthew chapter 28. You can turn there if you'd like. Matthew 28 is a pretty fascinating passage. Jesus has just been killed. He was dead. And now he's less dead. He's standing on this hill and people just, they can't believe what they're looking at. And it says this: the 11 disciples proceeded to Galilee, to the mountain which Jesus had designated. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some were doubtful. I submit to you, that's what this room is full of right now. People who have an easier time worshiping a risen Jesus than others. Others are saying, I have doubts and unanswered questions. And I've seen some things, but I have no idea what to do with it. And Jesus does not divide up the population. He doesn't put them into two distinct groups. He speaks to all of them. And he says this: Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, he says this to all of them, and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you. And lo, I am with you till the very end of the age. It's interesting, when you first start playing guitar, it hurts your fingers. It's kind of awkward. You're trying to teach your hands to reorient themselves around the way of the guitar. But it does not take long before you start to hear music coming out. And others, you start to get the guitar out at parties. It's like, hey, there's a little bit of music coming out of you. It's a beautiful thing. What I want to do for the next few minutes, I just want to challenge us to be with God. Maybe just close our eyes and think about what it means for us to take a step today. What does that look like? Because we all have a step to take. God wants each and every one of us more and more every day to trust Him. And so what does your step look like today? Some of you, you've been in church for a long time. You've been a Christian for a long time. And so you're like, okay, what does it look like to find more freedom? I talked to a guy first hour. He's been a Christian for a while. He said, I'm miserable. I'm miserable because I'm finding I don't really trust Jesus with my resources and with my time. I'm not generous. I'm scared. I'm worried all the time. I show up every Sunday, but I have trouble trusting Jesus with my living. For some of you, it's decisions that you have to make at work. I mean, some of you, you've never taken another step. I mean, it's been years since you've done anything with your faith because you're terrified you'll look fanatical. And listen, we don't want you to look fanatical either. What it's about is entrusting your jobs and your relationships to Christ and watching other people pick up on the song. Watching your reorientation of your life around who Jesus is produce the music that's been bottled up inside of you. For others of you, it's you have refused to forgive somebody a wrong. You're waiting for them to take the first step. That leads to death. That'll never happen. The way of Jesus takes that first step. So you need to leave here and maybe make a phone call or show up on somebody's doorstep, whatever is appropriate. You've got to give yourself to this person, and in so doing, give yourself to Jesus Himself. For others of you, you have never taken a step. You've kept Jesus at arm's length. And I want you to notice something about this passage. It says, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all I've commanded you. We look at baptism as like a graduation. Okay, I've got it all. I'm doing it right. And that's not what it is. He says, baptize them first, and then let them enter a season of learning my way. Some of you have never taken the baptism step. You're waiting for something. You can't even articulate what it is. And today's a day. just even talking about that, all these excuses start popping up in your head. But maybe today's the day where you trust God not just as creator, but as the authority of your living. We would love to meet with you right out there. We've got towels. Don't worry. Maybe that's the step you take today. But every one of us have a step to take today. So I want to give you a few minutes to give yourself more fully to Jesus. Father, it must be incredible to hear what's bouncing around in people's hearts this morning, in this very moment. The competing voices in our minds. We're so scared to take a step sometimes because of how it will be seen and whether you can be trusted to that level. Many of us, we don't realize it, but we've prided ourselves on merely believing that you're out there somewhere. You long for us to call you Father, Lord, and Friend. And so for us to put demands on you that you answer more of our questions rather than just bringing our questions with us. God, remind us that's not how relationships work. God, you challenge each of us to trust you more. So this moment is yours. It's yours to challenge each of us as individuals because our step looks different than the person sitting next to us. Challenge us as a community that we would be known by our trust, not what we prohibit. That we would be known by calling you good. Not just out there somewhere. God, thank you for your word, for your character, for your challenge. We so look forward to seeing what it looks like when an entire community takes one step. We are looking forward to watching what it looks like when all these people start playing the song. We play in Jesus' name. Well, there'll be some leaders up front, and don't know what this looks like for each of you, but again, some of you, you've been a Christian for a long time, and it's like, okay, for me to take a step, other people are going to have to know that my faith is about Jesus. It's about playing the music, not just about what I prohibit, what I'm against, what I don't do. This is going to affect your relationships and your family, and for whatever that is. May you play the song well. And for others of you, we want to welcome you to the band. Will you take that step today and join this ancient band of people that are playing their part of this song? We can be right out here for you if you need to take a step of baptism or you just want to enter into some conversations with us and find out what your step looks like. We'd love to do that with you. We'll see you next week.